Welcome to this week's episode of Time Added On. Forest faced the unenviable task of heading to the Etihad at the weekend. Last season, they were humbled 6-0, just the 2-0 this time around, but that really doesn't tell half of the story. Joined as always by Tom. Tom, you were at Man City at the weekend. Other than the results, good day. Saw some quite, I'm going to say drunken photos from your train journey home, but I don't want to throw you under a bus.
You're throwing me under a bus, aren't you, cheeky son?
Throwing your eyes under a bus, yeah.
We made some friends with some Argentinian lads who went to watch the game randomly. They were doing a bit of a world tour of football. Actually, because they added us on Instagram. They went to the Madrid derby as well last night. They went from Man City Forest to Atletico Madrid Real Madrid the day after. I was like, Jesus wept.
Which game do they think was better?
Well, they said that they support Forest now. I don't think I believe them. I think they'd say anything to shut us up. But they support Forest.
Given the company that you was with, I can't fault them. I would also say anything to shut you lot up. But good day all round then. Manchester, good day out. It's just a shame, obviously, the result didn't happen for us, but I don't think many people did think it was happening. We'll come on, we'll talk about the match. Obviously, a lot to digest from the City game. As I say, 2-0 scoreline doesn't really do it much justice. And then, obviously, we'll talk about Brentford at home this weekend and what Forest, I suppose, Tom, will look at this next run of games. Now, a lot was said about the opening six. A lot was said about the opening four away games. Obviously, Forest of that six playing four away, two at home. The opening sequence of games probably left a little bit of fear, I suppose, if you like, when we saw those fixtures in June. Forest are now looking at these next three, and they're looking at those as opportunities for points. But we'll come on to that. There's a lot to get through before then. In terms of City, we knew this was going to be a difficult game. I lost track how many times Steve Cooper said in his press conference pre-match that this was the hardest game in domestic world football. With that in mind, how do you think Forest did overall? What did you make of the overall performance on Saturday?
Well, I can't believe you've not mentioned Take That coming to the world famous City Ground before we even talk about football. Absolutely unbelievable. Anyway, I'm not going to bore you with that.
There was excitement in my household last week when that was announced. Unfortunately, we've realised we're on a cruise when Take That are playing at City Ground. So,
well, it just made me laugh out.
I was absolutely devastated.
All the articles were like, oh, what's this mystery sign? I was like, well, it's not the bat signal, is it, Dosses? Take that logo.
Playing all the big grounds. They're playing all the big grounds. But
secondly, you mentioned Steve Cooper's interview. I mean, you're talking probably pre-match, but post-match. I mean, the bloke sounded like he'd had five Orange Lucozades and 10 Baroccas, bless him. He sounded like he was wired. I was like, I want to see what you're having, sunshine. Come see, come say. But what did I think of it? I mean, the game itself, I mean, it's unfortunate, really, because Forest started off probably not great, and Man City started off as typical.
That is an understatement of the season, there.
And Man City started off in typical Man City fashion. But the one thing I would say, you know, the red card changes the game, and we can sit here all day long, you know, was it 2-0 because Man City took their foot off the gas a little bit? Was it 2-0, the red card, blah-de-blah-de-blah. The one thing I will say is, regardless, is that before we even get to half-time and before we even get into the second half with that red card, you know, Man City were still very dominant in the game, obviously, and that's what you're going to get when you play Man City. But all I was thinking, we had this conversation actually on the train up, and I said, look, if we go 1-0, 2-0 down, the last thing I want, though, is for Forest to just absolutely crumble. And I have to say, when we went 2-0 down as early as we did, I was expecting the worst and fearing the worst. And I think even at half-time, I said, you know, Man City will come out as strong. The red card obviously does play an impact, you know, have an impact on the game. But, you know, Forest competed again. And, you know, you don't want to be too positive about it because they lost, you know, not to kind of repeat Steve Cooper, they lost the game. And at the end of the day, if you don't pick up points, you've not, you know, it doesn't mean anything, you know, too much in terms of the end goal picture, but the performance and some of what we saw was very positive. So it's not like we've come out of the Etihad, which is probably what a lot of people were fearing. know, coming out of the Etihad with a much bigger defeat. And we all know how important goal difference can be. I mean, the amount of worries that we had about goal difference at the end of last season, obviously it didn't matter in the end because we picked up enough points, you know, far enough points in the end, really. I said far enough, maybe a bit too over the top, but, you know, we picked up enough points for it to matter. But the goal difference was in everyone's mind. See what I mean? Because that played a part. That was almost a point off Forest, if you like, in terms of that. So they've not been damaged too much in that respect.
Our pals up the M1 have got the goal difference problem this season. Sheffield United obviously getting absolutely trounced. And I enjoyed that a lot yesterday. Probably a little bit too much, to be honest with you. But we'll move on. I think you're right. I wasn't at the game. I was listening to the game on the radio. I went old school, listened to it on the radio. And you genuinely feared for Forest. I mean, going down, going behind so early on, you think, shore it up, just make sure they don't get another one in quick succession. But to be 2-0 down before 15 minutes in, City looking rampant as well. I don't think Forest really touched the ball, did they, in those opening 15 minutes. You did worry. Forest have done really well so far this season, haven't they? In terms of those away performances, changing the dial of how those same fixtures, corresponding fixtures, went last season, bar Chelsea, obviously, where Forest did reasonably well last season as well. The City, United and Arsenal, Forest got absolutely hammered in all three of those games last year. And I think that was the one thing that we've said. They've competed in every single game. They've not been hammered. They've not been battered in any of those games. They've stayed in it. I think at 2-0 on Saturday, you're worried that this one might be a step too far for them. But it was true to form, really, in terms of how those away games have gone this season. Forest stuck at the task. They didn't go under. I mean, that's the best thing you can say about Forest, is they didn't go under and they gave it a really good go. And we'll talk about that second half in a minute. But they were really good second half and they took the game to City to an extent. And I think that was a really positive thing. And you could just see now how this team are progressing. But in terms of the starting 11, we didn't really know how Steve Cooper was going to go. You did feel like he would go back to a back three, because that's what has worked for Forest, obviously, in recent times away from home. I'm not quite sure. We certainly were nowhere near, in reality, what the team, you know, our predicted 11 versus what he picked was nowhere near. Were you surprised, obviously, Sergio Aurier coming in at centre-back alongside Bolly Nyakate and Dominguez getting a start away from home at City? Difficult task for him. Were you surprised with the team that Steve Cooper went for?
Well, I think we got Matt Turner right, didn't we, in our prediction?
We got Turner right. Was in. Boom. And your Mangala, which we'll talk about again. You were loving a bit of Mangala on Saturday again.
I was, yeah. I mean, yeah, I think we're going to be speaking about this a lot. I don't think, you know, with the changes that we've had in the squads, I think it's going to be difficult to predict for maybe a few games longer now. I think probably until you get towards the end of October, we might start getting a picture of you know, kind of maybe where we're starting to solidify players, whether they're starting or not. But I think, you know, Cooper's even said it, he's going to be trying to integrate these new signings as best as he can, and that might be slower for some and quicker for others, and there'll still be games where he does something slightly different in each one. So the players he picks will change, and that's what we want, right? We want a few more options. But yeah, obviously we weren't that close, but I wasn't too surprised with him going back to a back 3-5, whatever you want to call it. I suppose the only surprises was I was maybe surprised, and, you know, good in a way, that Dominguez was in for his debut against Man City, because they don't get much harder than that in the Premier League. But, you know, we'll talk about him, but he didn't do any harm to himself, that's for sure. And then obviously the back 3-5 changed slightly, but there'll be some surprises with that, and maybe little surprise in terms of other people being rotated out of the team. So, I think we're probably going to see a slightly unsettled 11 for the few more games to come, probably until the end of the month, end of October. But I liked what I saw with the team he picked, and I didn't disagree with it too much at all, to be honest.
In terms of the first goal, obviously, everyone was bigging it up in terms of how good that goal was. Obviously, having seen it back a number of times, I mean, it was a really good Man City type goal, wasn't it? The football, the Pep football. was it a really, really good goal, or are Forest a little bit guilty? Is Tavares caught out of position? As I say, I've watched it back a few times. You can't help but think he's probably been caught out of position because of the nature of the way that Man City go about things. But I think with both the first goal and the second goal, the annoying thing for me is that whilst obviously it was good from City, I think Forest could have done better, certainly with the second one, which we'll talk about in a minute. But I feel like Tavares got caught out of touch here.
Yeah, I think good teams make difficult things look easy, and it was obviously a really good goal. But actually, away from just the two goals, that the left-hand side for Forest got exposed multiple times early on. It was obviously an area that Man City were targeting, and it was an area that Forest really struggled to cope with in terms of the players that they've got on that side. The likes of Kyle Walker and Phil Foden was coming in, and they really struggled. You know, early on in that game, it did seem like, you know, it's not me trying to criticise Tavares at all. You know, it was just an area of the pitch. And look, the opposition that you're coming up against and the personnel that you're coming up against is going to make his game, you know, naturally very, very difficult. But I do think Forest could have done better with both the goals, if I'm honest. And I think Steve Cooper touched on that in his post-match interview. Look, Man City are one of, if not the best team in the world at the moment. And therefore, it was always going to be a difficult challenge for Forest. But you almost wish the goals were a little bit better that Man City scored. Because you come away from the stadium going, well, that was impossible to keep out of the net. And I just wonder, look, if I played against Kyle Walker and Phil Foden, how would I do? Absolute pony. But, you know, I've just got to be fair in terms of the two goals. It was really early on in the game. Were Forest fully switched on, ready? I don't know. But the two goals for me were just maybe a little bit too soft in terms of the kind of goals I would have been not happy for Forest to concede. You know what I mean? But
yeah,
you just wish they were a little bit better than what they were.
And that's what I mean. I think you're probably right in terms of the way they started the game, whether it be sluggish or what, but I just think they got caught out and they've not had a lot of the ball. Well, they've not touched the ball. I genuinely don't think they touched the ball. Maybe touched the ball once or twice before that first goal. And maybe that had a part to play as well. They were obviously chasing the game and trying to keep their shape, but that's what you've got to do. They would have been drilled all week on that. And I think, you know, yes, it was a good goal, but I do think Forest could have done better. And the second one was just really disappointing. I think it's probably Aurier and I think it was Bolly at the far post as well, you know, both getting caught out. But you can't allow, I mean, Haaland's had a barren spell for his standards, I suppose, but you can't allow a man like Erling Haaland to have so much time and space to head that in the back of the goal. I mean, that is one of the things. I mean, he had a shocker at the City Ground, and that's one thing when you come into this game, you hope Man City have an off day, but they're not going to have an off day if you give them chances like that. And I think that was the most disappointing thing that, like you say, it's the ease of the chances that Forest gifted in that first 15 minutes. That one was criminal. I think the first one, you could probably put it down to you know, excellence, but that one was just pure sloppy from Forest, wasn't it, that second goal?
Yeah, definitely. It's far too easy for Haaland to just come in and dangle about in the air and set it into the back of the net. I mean, the bloke's a monster, but as you say, he was kind of coming into this game maybe, I mean, harsh to criticise him really, but I mean, not in the best run of form of his Man City career, I suppose, coming into this one.
Well, he's missed the second half, hasn't he? Let's be honest as well.
He's missed good chances in a lot of games running up to this. So to give him one of such ease when you know how good he is frustrating, you know, to just be able to, it's the ball from the left-hand side from me again. It's just kind of easily chipped in. And it's just easily headed in. So that one, yeah, I think out of the two of them, that is the one that you would wish Forest had just done a little bit better in. And like I said, I just think Man City had really targeted that area of the pitch as a point where they think they could have got in. And they exploited it really well.
I want to get your opinion on this, because when I was listening to, obviously I've watched the game back since. But when I was listening to the radio on the commentary, they were talking about that first 15, 20 minutes. And they were saying how Forest were just happy to stand off and almost give Man City the ball, let them have the space and not close down and just really try and stay in shape and try and stay compact, 10 men behind the ball. when I watched the game back, I didn't get that impression from Forest. I got the impression that they were working hard to try and close the space down. They were trying to close the gaps. They were trying to get onto Man City, but Man City were just popping the ball off left, right, centre. Forest couldn't really get a grip of them, but I didn't get the opinion that it was so much of a standoff approach. I suppose, within that, what's your take on that? And also, do you think Forest gave Man City far too much respect in that opening 10, 15 minutes? And I wonder whether it stems from that comment. If you hear your manager kind of drill it in the lead up to the game, 48 hours before the game, how it's the hardest game in world domestic competition, which, let's be honest, it is. But there's only so many times you need to hear that. I just wonder whether Forest were just giving them far too much respect. Because once that 15 minutes had passed, and yes, all right, you say City are 2-0 up, they think it's game over, and they don't really have to get out of second gear from that moment onwards. But Forest looked better. They got into them more. They got more on the front foot. Second half, obviously, got well into the game and dominated possession. But that opening 15 minutes, was weird, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's a real difficult one because, I mean, yeah, I think Forest stood off them a lot. But also, Man City is just so quick at passing the ball around that even if they were trying to press, you probably wouldn't notice it too much because before you've even got anywhere near the person you're trying to press, they've probably already passed it about three times.
And I suppose I'll kind of counteract what I said. You were right there because it's a balancing act, isn't it? You can't go in and press them all the time.
If you start pressing Man City constantly, they will just find the spaces and you'll be undone anyway. So it's a balancing act, as you said, really. I mean, you can't just constantly go at them. You are going to have to sit deep. I mean, Steve Cooper touched on it in his post-match as well. Naturally, teams, even if you don't start that way, you end up sitting back further than probably that you thought because you're just constantly just put on the back foot. So I think in that respect, I think, you will have noticed probably from the game in terms of the highlights or whatever people have watched is once obviously the red card happens and they're down to 10 minutes. I mean, naturally you would expect that to happen against most opponents, but not always the case really, especially when you're playing a team with that quality. It doesn't always work out that way, but Forest did press really well, I thought, at that point, and they did take the game to Man City. But in that first 20 minutes, I think they were really just waiting for something to pop up or a loose ball to come their way, which again, against Man City can be rare. But we did see it once, I don't know if it was in the first 20, but, we did see Kyle Walker just casually, pass the ball to Taiwo Awoniyi, who ran forward and, got tackled right at the edge of the box. I think at the time I was wondering if it was a penalty or not, but we were at the other end of the pitch when that was happening. But, so there was signs that might be able to happen, but I do think Forest didn't really have much of a choice in being, having to sit back early doors. And in terms of whether we showed them too much respect, I mean, again, I think that's a really tough one to judge because you're playing a team with so much quality. I mean, I also think for Steve Cooper, Pep's obviously given it a little bit pre-match, whether Steve Cooper is trying to do a little bit of something there. And also, secondly, it is, I suppose, just trying to mellow expectation a little bit. I'm not that loads of Forest fans would have been coming into this.
We were rife on it. I've been talking about 3-0, yeah.
But you know what I mean in terms of just, new squad, how well Forest have done. Maybe if there was the chance of a little bit more of a harsher defeat, just trying to, limit the damage. I mean, I don't think Forest showed them too much respect. I think, if anything, they just weren't switched on enough at the start of that match, which you switch off once against City, you'll get punished. And I think they switched off a couple of times and they got punished.
But I genuinely thought from that moment the second goal went in, Forest were improved. They gave it a go, didn't they? Like you said, there's the Taiwo chance. They definitely grew into the game and they were better. As the first half wore on, they were better. I think the second half obviously starts. The turning point is the Rodri red card. Been a lot of reaction to this in terms of, I suppose there's been a lot of reaction to it, not necessarily arguing or debating whether it was or wasn't a red card. I think everyone's kind of, I think the vast majority, if you're not a sky blue tinted persuasion, I think accepts that it's a red card. I think a lot of the reaction has been based on the way Morgan Gibbs-White goes down after the challenge, if you will. You can't do it, can you? It's a red card. Whether he puts his hand on his neck momentarily or what have you, he's put his hands around his neck. It looks worse on VAR, a bit similar to what we were saying last week from a Burnley handball perspective. In fact, you slow things down, it's going to look worse because it just everything does look worse. But either way, even if you watch it back in real time, it's a red card. Whether like Morgan Gibbs-White reaction, he probably buys it. He's gone down a touch too easy, I'll be honest. Do I like it? Do I not? I can't say I'm bothered either way, but I'm going to say that because I'm a Forest fan, right? But he has gone down easy. But it's a red. There's no doubt about it. And, you know, I don't think Pep really argued it. I think Pep's point was more he was upset with Morgan Gibbs-White. I think the Etihad was upset with Morgan Gibbs-White. Even Phil Foden, his best pal, was upset with Morgan Gibbs-White. But it was a red.
It was a red card, yeah. Yeah, it doesn't matter. I don't care how upset they are with Gibbs-White. I mean, look, does he go down like he's been shot? Yeah. But I also think that it comes into, and you know what, I tend to like watching some of the analysis, not always, but some of the analysis on Sky Sports News with Warnock, That comes on Stephen Warnock, who I think's usually fairly.
Neil's not on, is he?
Not Neil Warnock. He's not interested. he'll have his word at some point, I'm sure. But Stephen Warnock, in terms of his views on it, look, no, he didn't need to go down like that. He absolutely didn't. But I also think it's this thing in modern day football where players maybe feel like if they don't go down, that they won't get the decision. You know, it's one of those things where. It's like, again, I've touched on it so many times because I feel like it's still the talking point of the season so far. But that penalty versus that Man United got, you know, people saying Rashford cheating, but Rashford feels some contact and he goes down because he feels like if he does, he'll get it. You know, now whether people call that cheating or not, that's up to you. But I just think that's now part of the game. And as much as we might not like it, and as much as we wouldn't sit there and say, oh, I wouldn't do it myself, at the end of the day, if you're going to win a penalty and one of the toughest league fixtures you're going to have all season, or you're going to get a red card in one of the toughest fixtures you'll have all season, then you'll take it.
Let's sit here with Steve Cooper. Toughest game.
It's the only way you're going to be able to get a chance in a game, isn't it? So
yeah.
It's bound to happen.
And it was the turning point. But it was interesting, though, wasn't it, from that moment onwards. It had a bit of edge. It had a bit of spice to it because you saw the one where you went through on goal and tried to chip it over Edison. Probably should have done better, to be honest with you. But it kind of went in or kind of collided with Edison and went down. Edison was fuming because he thought that Taiwo was trying to claim a penalty, and he was irate, wasn't he? But there was definitely a bit of spice and a little bit of a... I mean, Forest had... To an extent, Forest had City rattled in that second half, and it did stem from that red card and perhaps the Morgan Gibbs-White reaction. But I think, you know... You said it earlier on. A red card does sometimes mean that teams, you know, do go back into their shell and protect what they've got. City don't tend to do that. City dominate teams left, right, and centre on their pitch. And for Forest to win that battle second half, I think it was close to 60-40 in favour of Forest in terms of possession, which is phenomenal in terms of the way that Forest set up away from home and the way that City play at home. But They had them rattled, and I think that second half performance in general was superb, and I think it was testament to the way that Forest played, and the way that Man City reacted. I think what was really pleasing is from a Steve Cooper point of view, was he showed belief and positive signs of trying to get back into that game, didn't he? Literally 10 minutes into the second half, he let five 10 minutes go after the sending off, and then he really put his foot down. I mean, look, Forest were 2-0 down against 10 men, had nothing to lose. And he threw on Callum Hudson-Odoi and Alanga for Aurier and Sangare. A lot of managers at the Etihad being 2-0 down probably would have just sat there and gone, do you know what? Even though we are playing against 10 men, I'll just damage limitation here. If we can keep it under three, then that's been a good day at the office. But that in reverse of what I was saying in terms of the opening 15 minutes, that's full testament and credit to Steve Cooper, isn't it? Just to give it a go, because you may as well go down fighting and try and get something from the game. And I tell you, that second half, that they gave it a really bloody good go, didn't they?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm not sure Forrest had them rattled, but I did think they played well. And I think, as you say there, they went for it. I mean, they brought Wood, Origi, Alanga, and Hudson-Odoi on. And, you know, some of those were for like Olaina and you know, not necessarily attacking players, and they went pretty attacking. So, and I thought they had some chances.
On that,
you know,
on the competing, just on the competing, but I don't necessarily mean in terms of peppering them with chances. I just mean the way that, in terms of rattling them, sorry. I just mean the way they went about it. They were getting their foot stuck in. They were in the faces. They were controlling the ball. Yeah, they weren't creating. They weren't peppering Edison, were they, in goal? But I just feel like the way that Forrest went about it, they definitely gave them something to think about.
I think the rattling thing, I actually thought pre-match Man City were being really weird about the game and how they came narrow into the down. Game. I don't know whether we upset them about Champions of Europe chance last season, because that seemed to come up a couple of times in the week. You know, maybe I'm just picking on something there, or you know, just whether it was trying to keep up the focus after the Champions League in midweek and things like that. But it was all a bit weird from them coming into it. But, you know, in terms of rattled on the pitch, I thought Man City, with 10 men, still managed the game exceptionally well. And I thought that they were preserving energy for the games they've got coming up. I think obviously they've got Arsenal in the not-too-distant future, which is obviously a biggie for them. So I think, and they've had a few injuries, albeit their squad and the amount of money they've spent on it, it still isn't that bad. But I think, they managed that very well. But I thought Forest did perform really well. I thought they performed as well as they could have in terms of getting into that final third. Your frustrations with Forest really are the same as what we came out against Burnley and said, you know, and that Steve Cooper came out against Burnley. Maybe this one we have a little bit of a softer critique because of the opposition that you play, and still some of the things that Forest did in terms of, you know, keeping up momentum and still trying to go at Man City, not being scared to get on the front foot against this team. That was all really positive. The frustration comes in that final third, in that finishing touch. You know, they had a couple of really good chances in my eyes, and they had more than that, you know, in terms of shots they should have had on target or shots that they should have done better with. But, you know, two that come into my mind straight away is the one you had a little bit of a chip over the defence touched. You know, the touch he did was fantastic, and I thought, what a brilliant touch. Now just do your thing like you've done at the start of the season, and unfortunately got it badly wrong. And then the second one is again a lovely little, you know, chip ball by Morgan Gibbs-White to Anthony Elanga, and the finish is actually it's a fantastic save by a fantastic goalkeeper, which is the thing when you're playing in Man City. You need more than probably one or two chances to be in with a chance of getting the goal. And Forrest could have had another couple of things, but they didn't have the composure. And I think that's the thing with the players that Forrest have got in the squad. They'll have a squad, and as Steve Cooper repeated it about 20 times after the game, after he'd had his Baroccas and his Lucozade, he, you know, said these players can play, and they can. They've shown that already. These players can play, but it's the composure. And that's what happens when you're signing players that maybe haven't been playing week in, week out for Man United and maybe have been dropped by the new manager. And, you know, Callum Hudson-Odoi, who's kind of been out in and out of things and obviously had his problems. That's composure's maybe going to take a little bit of time, but that's why it's so important they're going to have to create so many chances, because, you know, it might not be that they finish them as, you know, lethally as they would if they were all 100% fully match fit ready for the Premier League. And that's the way that I look at it. I thought the football Forest played was good, but we're talking about a group of players that maybe, apart from Taiwo, you can't really complain with his finishing rate at the start of the season. We're talking about a group of players here that maybe aren't going to be as clinical as they would be halfway through the season. So that's going to come. And look, I'll still have my point of Morgan Gibbs-White. I thought some of the balls he played were fantastic on Saturday. but also he's got to find a little bit more of that cleanness about his game that he had last season, not trying to do too many flicks here and there that were unnecessary, and he needs to find more of a finish to his game as well. But hopefully that will come with time.
I agree with a lot of you said there. I think the game for me in that second half, I think it's about belief. It's about belief, and it's about this squad now starting to believe how good they can be. Because I do look at the six games that we've played. I think Forest have got a very, very talented squad now. But it's right. We've got to put it all together. We've got to find the right combinations to make it work, to make it click. But, you know, I've seen glimpses of this side over six games that make me think this is a good Forest team, and they'll get better, and they'll pick up points. And I think that second half performance, the Alanga chance was outstanding. It really was a really, really good save, but that was a brilliant bit of football as well. And it was an unbelievable take from Alanga. I would love that to be to have nestled in the bottom corner. But there's enough there, isn't there? I mean, look, it was disappointing. Forest dominated that second half, created a good number of chances. Yes, all right, City did, you know, manage it well. As you said, they've got big games coming up, and they were able to. Let's be honest as well, Haaland could have made it 3-0 if he hadn't missed that, well, by his standards, sitter, by my standards, impossible chance. But it was a good second half. But I think the disappointment come that we didn't score. But there's enough, I mean, there's enough positives there, isn't there? I mean, coming away from the Etihad, having lost 2-0 and sitting there Saturday night and reflecting on the result and the performance. Look, we're football fans. We want our team to win. But I mean, you can take a lot of heart in that performance second half, can't you? There was definitely more positives than negatives that came out of that afternoon.
Yeah, you didn't come out of a defeat going, God, that was absolute rubbish. I thought, you know, once the second goal goes in as early, I thought, oh, what an afternoon we've got on our hands here. But, you know, that wasn't the case in the end. And there were some really good performances, and Forest played some nice football, and you didn't come away from the game going, God help us for the rest of the season. You came out of it, as we have done the other games, thinking it's year-on-year improvement, and that's all you want to see is that year-on-year improvement. And I thought some individuals had some really good performances. You know, we touched on it before. I think Mangala's going massively under the radar is actually Forest's best central midfielder so far this season for me. I think he doesn't do a lot of maybe spectacular stuff because that's for the guys in front of him to do that. But he's certainly got a lot of energy about him this year. He's a lot more dynamic in the way that he plays. And that's, again, helped by some of the other players around him that's allowing him to do that. And also just confidence probably more than anything. You know, this is a guy that's played for Belgium recently and maybe is finding his feet a little bit more in the Premier League and at the level that he wants to be. So I really like the look of Mangala so far this season. And we had a day, you know, debutant in terms of Nico Dominguez, and I don't think he put too much of a foot wrong. He looks very clean. You know, Steve Cooper praised him afterwards, and so did a lot of the media, and he would have done no harm to his chances of starting again on Sunday. So, you know, and there's others I could touch on as well. Ole Aina again, who seems to be already becoming a bit of a fan favourite on a free transfer in the you know, summer window, performed well. And Matt Turner, again, who, you know, for everyone, including myself, who's saying might find it difficult to keep his place. Well, until the bloke puts a foot wrong, he won't be losing his place anytime soon. His performances have actually really, if anything, only got better. In terms of his distribution, I'm finding he seems to be a lot more confident in finding where some of these players are running to when he's got the ball. His shot stopping has never been much of a question for me, but it's his distribution that I think's got better, and he seems to be enjoying himself as well. So some really good individual performances as well that Forest can take from it. And they now go into, you know, I would say, I mean, the games don't get easy now for Forest at all, but, you know, when we were looking at the breakup of the fixtures, you kind of saw that Man City game as a bit of a right, you know, that was kind of the stop of a bit of a torrid start to the season in terms of the fixture list, and Forest have come out of it better than you probably would have hoped and expected, and have now got rid of four of the hardest away fixtures in the league that they'll have all season. So they have to take some confidence from the performances. They've got only one win and three defeats, but against those teams, if they were playing someone else, they might not have had the three defeats. You know, it would have been maybe one or two defeats and two wins or whatever it might have been. So that's the positives you're going to take from it.
Tom Denman, the spokesman for the Oral Mangala fan club. But no, I agree. I must admit, I do agree. I thought he was, we said on the pod, didn't we? I thought he was brilliant last week. I don't think he gets any sort of, he doesn't get the recognition he deserves. I think he's a really class operator. He's not going to grab the headlines necessarily, Oral Mangala, but he does a lot of the stuff right. He looks good on the ball. Forrest, I think probably the surprise with Mangala starting was the fact that they didn't think Forrest were going to have a lot of the ball at City, but when they did second half, he was really a huge part of that.
I also think some of the players starting, I think, you know, a lot of it comes from this ideology that Steve Cooper's got his favourites and those players will stay in the team. It doesn't matter who else you've got around, but, you know, so maybe people just expected Yates to start, for example. And I think, you know, we spoke about the centre-backs already and maybe people just expecting Worrell to start. But I don't think that's going to be the case. I think I said it before. I think he wants a very, very competitive team. He wants players to fight and fight hard. So that's now what those players have to do to get back into it.
Mm. The only other name I was going to throw out there, which you didn't mention, was Nia Carty. Was good. I thought he's another one who's strong, really good, but classy on the ball as well. Good from terms of passing out from the back, and it made a couple of really good tackles first and second half. But one of the balls he played out of defence, which has been doing the rounds, obviously on X as well, is really, really, really. If we can keep Nia Carty fit, I think he's one of the first names on the team sheet in terms of the defence. I think he could be really big for Forest this season. But yeah, Dominguez, look, I was delighted to see Dominguez start. I was really excited about that one. When we signed him, sounds like a Steve Cooper type player in terms of midfield, closing down, good on the ball, energetic, likes to press. I think we saw all of those bits on Saturday in a snapshot. And you just say, Steve Cooper praised him, everyone praised him, he came out really well. And I'm really excited. I think that midfield, I think the makeup of that midfield in terms of the options that Forest have got, they've got plenty of choices there depending on the opposition and they can change it up. I think you're going to start to see a little bit similar to when we did last October, November. You might start to see it settling down now in terms of two, three players starting to dominate selection, maybe four, depending on the opposition, and kind of change up. There'll be a core group. But there's definitely, you know, different options in that midfield, and Forrest the best. I think the midfield that he picks this weekend is going to be interesting, and we'll come on to talk about the team selection for Brentford in a minute. But I thought it was really, really positive. And as you say, for Forrest to finish this period of games now, the opening six, on 7 points, 12th in the league, yeah, I think you'd have absolutely snapped your hands off for that, wouldn't you, come start of August?
Definitely. Yeah, definitely. I think where Forest are and the points that they've got, it's now just they have to build on it. You know, they have to build on it with these upcoming fixtures. You know, obviously we're going to touch on them, but Brentford next and then, you know, Palace and Luton. They now have to, you know, if they came away from these games with 0 points, then actually a good start means nothing. So that's not me trying to be too critical or too harsh. I'm just saying it has to be built on.
No, it does.
You know, it has to be built on. You know what I mean? You can't come out of this going, wow, we've looked, you know, year on year improvement, and then you lose to Luton at home. I know it sounds really harsh because I'm not trying to undermine Luton, and I'm not trying to say Forest have to win their home games, because they're going to have to, as we've already said on this pod before, we're going to have to see much more of a mixed bag this year in terms of away home results. There shouldn't just be this damning expectation to win every home game, but you know they are going to have to build on what they've done so far. So look, it's positive right now in terms of what they've done. I would have taken this absolutely when we saw the fixtures at the start of the season. It's now not a chance, you know, this ain't the opportunity to go, well done. Now's the opportunity to go, right, where to from here. So yeah, let's see what happens.
Well, let's come on to it. Let's talk about this next round. You've kind of alluded to it there. Obviously, Forest will see this kind of as an end of the opening run of fixtures, and they have a free game period now before they go to Liverpool at the end of October. And it's a chance for Forest to pick up points. It is tricky. No game, as you say, in the Premier League is easy. Two of those games at home, obviously Forest have been played four away so far. So it will be a chance for them to get points from the bottom. I mean, from this, I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit, but from this run of fixtures, how many points are you looking to pick up? How many points do you think would represent a good return for Forest in this block of three?
Block of three. So we're not including three. Liverpool in this. Right.
Forget Liverpool.
Fine. Good, because I was going to say zero. Zero from that one. The whole four.
About to say, Jesus. Negative sums back.
No, I think you have to look at it. You have to be aiming for seven.
Nine.
But, you know, well, yeah, you have to be aiming for nine.
No, I think seven. Yeah.
You want to be aiming to win every game, Chris. I mean, come on. But loser's attitude over there. But I think seven would be a really good turnout. You know, six, seven. I think you're talking around that area. I think six and seven represents a good return.
Five,
seven, a really
nine,
good
yeah.
return.
Yeah.
Six
yeah.
would be a good return. And five, maybe coming out of it thinking, what if in one of those games? And that's not because they expect, you know, I'm not saying Forest are now just a really good Premier League team. It's going to take time. But this next run of three, as we've touched on, represents an opportunity to build rather than just an opportunity to just, you know, rest on your laurels a little bit. So that's what I'd be aiming for and hoping for.
Brentford first up out of those treble of games, if you like. One of the golden boys of English football in terms of the media point of view. They obviously lauded as one of the model clubs. Thomas Frank and his side coming off the back of two straight league defeats. Lost 3-1 at home to Everton at the weekend. I don't know if you saw any of that game. You probably didn't because you were on your way back from City. But they looked well off the pace. Very unlike Brentford. Everton had those type of performances, must caveat. Obviously, we saw what Everton did to Brighton at the Wythdean towards the end of last season as well. But they looked well and truly off the pace. Obviously, previously lost away at Newcastle. Before that, they've only had two away games so far this season. So losing 1-0 at Newcastle. But they did go to Fulham and win 3-0. I mean, what have you made of Brentford so far? Obviously, no Ivan Toney for Thomas Frank. They've still picked up decent results, draw at home to Tottenham on the opening day. They've got Arsenal in the Cup, I believe, midweek as well. So they could, in theory, be coming off the back of three straight defeats. It's been an interesting start, isn't it, for Brentford? They're not looking like the Brentford of last season, but they've still got some dangerous players.
Yeah, I don't think people knew what to expect from Brentford because there was so much of the narrative around Ivan Toney, and other things haven't helped him. You know, Rico Henry's injured, and Kevin Sharpe, yeah. who they signed, he went down with an injury in the warm-up just before the Everton game, which doesn't help when you've got that bad luck against you. It seems to come in waves, and you know, I'm not sure how bad the Kevin Sharpe one is and whether that's been announced yet in terms of how long they expect him out for. But obviously, if he is out for a little bit, getting a signing out injured so early on in the season certainly takes the momentum against you. I mean, look at the fixtures and the results they've had, sorry, so far this season. I mean, at home, you know, Palace at home are 1-1 and Bournemouth at home are 2-2. You would, if you're their fans, you're probably thinking missed opportunities because obviously they've then gone away to Newcastle, which is a tough game. They kept it to 1-0.
Did well, apparently, yeah. Yeah.
But they then come back and they lose 3-1 at home to Brentford, to Everton. They didn't lose 3-1 at home to themselves. They lost 3-1 at home to Everton. So it's a real difficult one to kind of read them. It seems to be that they're running slightly short in their team. And obviously the lack of goals from Ivan Toney was always going to hurt them. But you still have to be wary about them, as you say, because they do have players there. You can't just go, oh, they're rubbish. I mean, they're only a point behind Forest still in the table.
Yeah.
And, you know, they certainly have decent players, which is why I think the lineup for this one, I think everyone's kind of already reverting to this thinking of, well, we'll play 4-3-3 at home and we'll go five at the back away. But I don't necessarily think that's the case. I think it'll be really interesting for this one whether Forest might stick with a back five just because of the way that they set up. Otherwise, you're trying to probably match Brentford slightly in the way that you go about things. So I'd be intrigued to know to see what that team lineup is.
Yeah, look, you've got to be careful. It's always that one as well where a team coming off the back of a couple of defeats, they're a bit of a wounded animal, aren't they? And I think that might be the case here. They're going to have a point to prove. And Thomas Frank, as much as I don't personally like him, I don't think many people do, other than if you've got a Brentford persuasion, but he's a good manager, isn't he? He's a really good coach. And he'll have them fired up. They'll have a good game plan. Obviously, Thomas Frank was also watching the Monday night game, you know, so he'll have seen Forest at home firsthand a couple of weeks ago as well. So this one will be, it'll be an interesting one. In terms of Forest Brentford last season, it was interesting in terms of the home performance. I wasn't overly impressed with Brentford. I thought Forest did a lot of the running, obviously scored early through Gibbs White. Forest shot themselves a foot, although, albeit, again, VAR wasn't our friend that day and Brentford get a dodgy penalty. And then the second goal that Brentford got in the second half was just woeful defending, ball over the top, and just Forest Achilles heel last year in terms of just not helping themselves. Obviously, Forest then get the equaliser in the last minute. But it was I wasn't impressed necessarily with Brentford last season at the City Ground. The away game, we all know that, you know, Forest did really well there for 80 minutes and then completely shot themselves in the foot and ended up losing. Either. I think we all thought that was the end last season. That was probably one of the low points of the season, certainly in that running. But Forest gave a good account of themselves against Brentford. And whilst Brentford are a good side, there's nothing to fear here, I don't think, for Forest. I think, to your point, it will be interesting to see how Forest and Steve Cooper approach this one. Will it be a similar side in the way he set up for Burnley? Or does he change it up and does he go with the back three? I mean, there's so many questions. I think, for me, the way that Forest played in that second half on Saturday and the way that Forest played for 70 minutes against Burnley, you would probably anticipate Gibbs White, Awoniyi, Callum Hudson-Odoi starting. So, therefore, it leaves you with a bit of a decision to make in midfield. If you think you want to match the setup that Brentford go for, they tend to operate with a 4-3-3. It depends whether you want to match the man for man in midfield, because you look at the midfield that started at City, you could almost envisage a world where you start with your Hudson-Odoi, Awoniyi, Gibbs White, and then a midfield three of Sangare, Dominguez, Mangala, and then a back four. I can see that being the case. I don't buy this at all, and I do agree with you. I don't think it's a case of we play a back three away and a back four at home. I think it's horses for courses, but I think given the way, I don't think that midfield battle, you don't want to lose anything in there by losing an extra man. So I think, I personally think Forest will go with a back four. I think the injury to Tavares maybe helps that a little bit as well, in terms of Aina will go out to left back, Aurier starts at right back, and Niakate Boly is your pair in the middle. I think that's kind of got a nice balance to it. Gives Forrest a good amount going forward, but gives them protection at the back. I can see him on this occasion going for that option in terms of a 4-3-3.
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting. As I said, I mean, Brentford tend to favour a 4-3-3. So, like I said, it depends whether you want to match them like for like or whether you want to try and exploit them with the 4-3-3. I suppose it's trying to preempt what they're going to do into the kind of wounded animal that they are, as you're calling them. but I think it'll be interesting regardless. I mean, the back 3/5 doesn't, as we've already spoke about, doesn't make you less attacking. No. You can still play Hudson-Odoi in what would have used to have been the Brennan Johnson role. Your Gibbs White stays where he is, Awoniyi stays where he is, and you've got the rest to do their jobs as we've done in the past. So it depends whether we've got the confidence to do that or whether we are going to try and, you know, put our own front foot forward and not worry about Brentford and just go, right, do your thing. I personally wouldn't be surprised with the back five. And you know, I often find matching up with a team that's probably played that formation for a long time, you know, when you've got a fairly newish team and you're trying a few different things can work against you. So it'll be interesting, as you said. I mean, we spoke about it last week. I said that formations, does it really matter anyway? So, you know, let's just not bother talking about it, shall we? But no, I expect that they'll change things up. And I also like the option of having like an Alanga on the bench who can maybe come on in the second half and then run at the team. I think that's the one thing I really like. I think that's something you lose when they all start, is that you lose, you know, albeit we might think they're good players, why shouldn't you start them from the off and let them do their thing? There's something at this moment whilst they're bedding in as a team that I like, having that good option off the bench to surprise the opposition. Maybe once they all are firing on all cylinders, then yeah, 100% you start them. But I quite like that surprise factor off the bench.
It's interesting. We're arguing over playing another centre back over another centre midfielder, right? But what is good, I think, is the fact that we will make changes. You'll bring your Hudson-Odois in, and there'll be a change at the back because obviously Tavares have injured. Even with this change of system, we're not talking about, and Steve Cooper might completely blow this out of the water and make me look like a mug, but I don't think we're talking about making wholesale changes for this game, are we? We're talking about small tweaks. So yes, he's trying to find combinations, he's trying to find a team, but we've said it a lot already this season post the end of the transfer windows that we're not ripping it up. It's not the same scenario. We're not in the same place we were 12 months ago. We're talking about little tweaks here and there, and they're tactical tweaks, they're changes to that he thinks can help him win the game. I'm going to throw one back at you then. If you think that it could be potentially a back three, I presume Worrell would perhaps come in on that right-hand side of a back three. Who'd you drop out of the midfield? If you've got Dominguez, Mangala, Sangare as your midfield three potentially, or certainly the midfield three that started at City, if you're going to bring another defender in, which one of those drop?
Yeah, interesting one that. I was thinking in my head, I thought you were going to ask me about the fullbacks because I actually thought Montiel played well against City when he came on.
I've done him a dirty there, and we'll talk about that in a minute. I should have mentioned Montiel. I did have him in my notes actually to talk about, so that's the schoolboy error on my part.
I thought he did well when he came on. He proved a few people, maybe, you know, gone a little bit too early and writing him off. But, you know, in midfield, that's a really tough one. I mean, because you've given a debut to Dominguez against the hardest team in the league, and he's performed well. Mangala's been consistently good since the start of the season. Sangare, he's bedding into the team and would maybe be a bit of a big splash if he was dropped. So it's a really difficult one. That's why I'm not the manager.
Get off the fence.
I mean, for me, in which case you have to drop Dominguez at the moment, because, you know, albeit people might say that, so I think it would be harsher to drop Mangala. And if we're refusing to drop Sangare, then there's only one left, isn't there?
Well, at least you got off the fence. Anyway, it's hard. But yeah, we're not the manager. Thank God. So everyone will be delighted with that.
But it means, you know, you've got another good option on the bench. Do you know what I mean? You know, we're saying, oh, how harsh, like, but at the end of the day, you can then bring a player on to change the game if you need to. So it's not necessarily a bad option.
I'm going to predict if he goes with a back three, he will go with a midfield pivot of Sangare and Dominguez. I think that for me will be over time. And I agree, Sangare has had a difficult first. I like Mangala. Don't say you're ahead of me. I like Mangala. You know that. But I just think over time they may establish themselves as the pair, and then the Mangala's Yeats. Hey, we're forgetting about Danilo when he comes back as well. They will then start to fit around those two, I think, as a pivot. But anyway, look, good decisions, good problems to have, right? We weren't having this discussion this time last year where we were talking about the likes of Lewis O'Brien. God bless him. Montiel, let's come back to him quickly because I did do him a dirty and completely missed him off my notes from a City point of view. He was good, wasn't he? When he came on, I think there was probably a few in the away end that were like, here we go again. Probably again, a bit of a baptism of fire for him coming on and coming on against City. But I thought he was really good, really good. Made a couple of really good challenges. 40 might get sent off towards the end because we're going back to the having City rattled. Grealish was going after him and they were having a right old ding dong, weren't they, for that last 5-10 minutes, which is brilliant to see. Love Jack Grealish. A really good battle, not for you, is he? Not your cup of tea.
No, but not at all.
He did well, didn't he? But it's the same. I think we said on the pod last week, we talked about the start that Lodi had here last year, not to write Montiel off. And yeah, I think he came out of that with a lot of credit. He'll feel a lot better this week after that.
Yeah, I mean, Grealish, how about you skip leg day once, mate, and go for a class in Manus,
here
mate.
We go. Here we go.
No, I thought Monty did well. I mean, look, I'll be quite honest. Were we being a little bit critical of him to the Argentinians on the trail? They were like, oh, Dominguez and Montiel. And we were like, yeah, Dominguez, Montiel. But yeah, I think in that game, he did well, to be fair to him, when he came on. And it's not easy to come on as a sub in that game against those players. And especially, you know, he would have known he'd come in for a bit of criticism after his performance at earlier on in the season in the early game. So look, I think he did well, and fair play. And again, it gives you options in that fullback area. I think Ola Aina obviously has done well in both right back and left back when he's played, so that gives you a bit of freedom, which is exactly what Steve Cooper would have wanted, having a decent enough player that can do both. So there's battles to be had in the other positions, and I don't think he did himself any harm when he came on in that game.
Right, give us a score prediction for Brentford.
I'm going to go 3-1 Forest.
Oh, I'm going to go 2-1. I think Forest will win this. Highly confident, but I think it will be tough. I think it'll be a tight one. I think 2-1 is probably fair. I like your 3-1. I hope you're right. But yeah, I'm looking forward to this one. It should be a good game of football, and hopefully kickstart Forest into this little mini
run.
I went
3-1 against Burnley as well, and we drew 1-1. So,
don't take everything you say as gospel. But, right, let's do a little guess here, and then let's get off. Last week was, of course, Nicky Summerby. Do you remember Nicky Summerby?
Yeah.
No. Yeah. Right, this week, this one, this is so easy. It is unbelievable, but it was really hard to try and find a Forest Brentford link. This is the first one that came to my head when I was pottering this morning. So anyway, joined Forest in the summer of 2018 from Bournemouth for a fee of £6 million. That's probably giving it away straight away. Whilst at Bournemouth, he also had loan spells at Reading, Sunderland and Villa. In total, he made 144 appearances for Forest, scoring 54 goals. He captained the side during our promotion season in 21-22. Who is that? Nice and easy, Tom. You probably got it straight away. But answers on a postcard, send them in on X. That one. Nice and easy. I'm expecting lots of replies to that one. Great pod. Thank you, everyone, to listen. You can give us a follow or a like on Spotify and Apple. Please leave a review. It really helps. If you want to email us, you can get us at timeaddedonpod@outlook.com. Also, give us a follow on Twitter @timeaddedonpod. Tom, I enjoyed that. We're looking forward to Sunday. Nice, 10-hour round trip with a 5-year-old in tow this week as well. So that's going to be interesting. You're on snack duty in the car, so you're going to be extremely busy while I drive up and down the A1. But I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be a good one. So everyone else who's going, enjoy it. Come on, you Reds. We'll be back next week for another episode.